Guys, welcome back. Our guest tonight is a documentary filmmaker. His new movie, Scary Stories, is available now on video on demand. Cody Merrick is on the program. Cody, how you doing?
All right. Hold on just a second. Let me make sure. I always got to check and make sure it's using the right microphone because I actually have a decent microphone. I just got to make sure Skype is using the correct one.
Oh, I'm way familiar with that.
I was about to say, we know exactly what you're talking about.
I think I was using my external computer speaker for what, Mike, a year and a half?
Yeah, you went and bought a fancy mic and a board, and you were still talking through your laptop.
Yeah, just picking up the ambient sounds all over
like
the place.
A goof.
Okay, so do I sound better now?
Cody, you sound pretty good. You sound great.
Okay, cool. So are you in St. Louis?
We are, yeah.
Okay, I'm kind of from St. Louis.
Kind of from?
Well, my wife is from St. Louis, and I moved there and was there for, oh gosh, maybe 10 years, something like that. And I'm from Missouri. I'm just from Southwest Missouri, but down by Springfield.
Oh.
And so moved there after I graduated from Mizzou and moved to St. Louis, and then my wife grew up there and stuff. So we're pretty much St. Louis people.
You hear that, drunk? A St. Louis guy makes good, right?
Yeah, well, let's go Blues.
Sure.
Cody, we watched your documentary. It was great. We enjoyed it a lot. It's available now on video on demand. Guys, if you liked those books when you were a kid, you should check this out. It's a good watch. I'd say even if you didn't like the books, check it out anyway because it's interesting. I didn't know any of that stuff. I didn't know that it was a challenge, but I guess it makes sense when I mean.
One of the early ideas behind this documentary had to do with there being a certain mystique about it. Like so many people remember these books, but they didn't really know that much about them. They just kind of remember. And in fact, a lot of people love the books, didn't realize millions of other kids loved the books just as much as they did. So
right.
It had a certain mystique around it, but again, not a lot of answers, not a lot of actually knowing too much about both the books and kind of the challenges and the debate over whether they're appropriate and that sort of thing.
I remember very vividly, like I don't know how old I was, if I was in third grade or whatever, but I remember this book just magically appeared in the school library. Like it just popped up. It was a brand new Scholastic or whatever branded book it was. And it started making the rounds and being blown away by the fact that this was available to us as elementary school kids and was, you know, marketed towards children and ended up being in like this Scholastic book fair and things where, you know, you'd go to the library and as the subsequent volumes came out, you couldn't check them out. Like, because if they kids constantly had them in a rotation and you had to put your name on a list to get them to where you finally just had to suck it up and like purchase the book. Like I still have my copy of the third volume of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark because it finally got to the point where, you know, you just couldn't get that third volume. It never made its way back to the library. So you had to purchase it and you didn't know where these books came from.
And it grew out of almost like, you know, the author passed away shortly after the third book. And certainly he did a certain amount of press when he was around, but generally they grew over time as like a, you know, people think of, you know, movies and books having a cult following. This was kind of its own, you know, a children's version of a cult following where like everyone was talking about it and passing it around, but you know, it wasn't something that had a spokesperson who was going around promoting it per se. It was, you know, totally became a phenomenon because of the kids and their natural interest. And it grew. I mean, these books were published between 1981 and 1991. And they're often thought of as 90s books, partially because it took some time and it grew and it built. And so really in the 90s is when it became this just huge, you know, title that everyone, oh yes, of course I know about those books. Everyone read those books, that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, I interviewed R.L. Stein for this. Of course, R.L. Stein's been interviewed a million times and, you know, there's not that much mystique around him because he's a lovely person and he was a great interview, but at the same time, you know, there's not, he's given a million interviews, so there's nothing new to know with these books, you know, this kind of built up pent up, you know, interest. And so that was a good opportunity for a documentary.
When I was a kid, I had no idea what R.L. Stein looked like. I think I found out what R.L. Stein looked like 5 years ago. Like I read every Goosebumps, every Fear Street book for a good period of my childhood. And I never saw that guy. And maybe I was just sheltered because I didn't know about the controversy of you saying that there wasn't a whole lot. He didn't do a lot of marketing because, you know, he died shortly after the third book. I imagine the controversy probably sold some books
Sure. Yeah. No, absolutely. Well, and it also created more interest from kids, right? I mean, kind of natural. A kid hears that you're not supposed to have something well, right, and now I want it even more, you know? So it definitely added something to it that, you know, this was the cool book to have because some parents think you're not supposed to have it. And so it ends up being kind of counterintuitive.
So what's your in on the books, Cody? Like, what was it that made this something that you wanted to do? I think I read somewhere that this movie took you 5 years to make. Like, yes. What was your passion for this source material?
So early on, yes, you're right, about 5 years, not, you know, it fits and starts and so on and so forth, but generally speaking, it has been 5 years, yes. Early on, it really started with, you know, my background is media related to children and children's books and that sort of thing. So, and also I just had an interest in it. I had an interest in, at the root of it, a documentary, a story that has to do with children's literacy and getting kids reading. But of course, you want some kind of avenue to explore that, right? You want, you know, a example that, you know, proves your point or proves your case, that sort of thing. And so I thought of these books and I saw the story there. You know, I mean, you had a book series that I knew was wildly popular. I remember them. I'm one of those. I was in my 20s just kind of remembering that, oh, yeah, of course. And when the third book came out in 1991, I was 11 years old. So I guarantee you I got it in Scholastic Book Order around when I was 11 years old. And so I had that memory, but also I could see that so many other people had that memory of these books. And you know, it had created a certain legacy, but then I saw the story there because on top of that, it was the most banned or challenged book of the 1990s and generally one of the most challenged books of the last 40 years. So you juxtapose those together and I just could see the documentary kind of writing. I mean, I didn't know everything that was going to go into it, but I said, that's a fantastic starting point, you know, is, you know, the juxtaposition of how wildly popular they are, as well as, you know, how much they were challenged. And so, but at the root of it was also this message about, okay, you know, these books got kids reading. Yes. You know, you can have a debate as far as age appropriateness and things like that. And that's, there's some, I always say there's some nuance there. I mean, right, as much as it's easy to say, I don't believe in banning books if you talk about, okay, but at some point we have to talk about, I'm not an advocate for all books to be available to all kids everywhere, so on and so forth. So they were
borderline, but they did promote like a curiosity. They opened the door to kids wanting to see something that maybe they didn't know much about.
Well, and over and over again, you hear people say, these were the books that got me reading.
Right.
And the fun thing about a documentary like this is, okay, this isn't the most modern example of censorship. There are other titles on the list nowadays, but the benefit here is this book was very popular in the 80s and 90s and very censored in the 80s and 90s. Now we get to talk to all those people who grew up on these books that are now my age, that are in their, you know, 30s and 40s. And my joke is usually most of them didn't turn out to be suicidal maniacs, right? I mean, they didn't actually act out the stories that they read about. You know, they've gone on and to be musicians and artists and writers and all kinds of other things.
Well, and I feel you touched on it in the documentary too, you know, how these stories maybe touch on some unsavory things or telling more fundamental stories within these little snippets of horror that maybe, you know, they're not being exposed to by parents or things that they would have to learn on their own later in life. where like I try to. I was raised on this stuff. Like I'm the same age as you, so I would have been 11 in 1991 as well. And I was raised on horror. Like these books were right up my alley because I had watched, you know, there's probably movies that I watched a little bit too early, like a lot of 80s kids. And I tried to expose my children to some of these things too. So it's not so shocking, I'd say, as they get older. So they're more not desensitized necessarily, but they realize some of these things, you know, in their childhood and can figure out ways to deal with it as they grow into adulthood.
That said, and I totally agree with that. That said, I mean, different kids are different. Different parents are different. I mean, my example is I've got an 8-year-old. He's about to be 9 years old, and he does not deal with scary stuff. Like he's like, nope. He just like we tried at least a little bit of the Goosebumps movie, and he noped right out of there. He's like, no, I'm not really early on, and that's fine. You know, I don't press him on it. You know, I challenge him a little bit with slightly scary things, but at the same time, I'm not saying you need to read this book. I'm not insisting upon it. It's like it's a kid by case basis. By the time I was his age, yes, I was watching the scariest of scary movies. And I was definitely reading Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark and Goosebumps. And by middle school, I was on to, you know, Stephen King and stuff like that. And that's not him. And that's fine. You know, so you've got all these different examples, you know?
Definitely. And I see that just in my two children. I have a 10-year-old daughter and I have a 7-year-old son. And obviously I'm not exposing my 7-year-old son to anything, you know, too toxic for his little brain, but there are some things that I'm exposing him to. It's like to see, you know, and like you said, obviously, you know, if your kid is reacting negatively, that's maybe not necessarily something you want to continue to show them. But he enjoys it. Like he really likes some of the scarier stuff. You know, he actually got a couple of Five Nights at Freddy's books from the book fair, which I am reading with him to make sure that they're not too crazy, right? But my daughter has no interest in these things. She's not into scary stuff. She doesn't want it. She freaks out. But I completely agree on a kid by kid basis. But it seems like maybe back in our generation, it seemed like, you know, kids were maybe more apt to be able to deal with these things. And I don't know if that's a generational thing or if it's a societal thing or what.
I mean, I've heard people say that. I'm not totally convinced of that, which is to say, I don't know. I seriously just got away from, I'm a den leader of this Cub Scout. So I've got, you know, eight, nine-year-old boys that I have almost on a weekly basis. And one of them talks about Pennywise and knows who Pennywise is and talks about him and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know. No, I don't, especially, and nowadays they have the internet, which is, that is scary. I mean, there's goods and bads to it, right? But they have everything at their fingertips and that scares parents. But at the same time, I don't know, there's also a certain amount of benefits. I'm not one of those that feels too strongly that, I don't know, the next generation can't handle things as well as we do. I think that sometimes gets sensationalized, you know, or it's a reactionary thing to seeing some kids versus I see kids all the time that, you know, are handling things just fine. And I regularly see, you know, just because I'm very active in social media, and so everyone's always reaching out to me regarding Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. And on a daily basis, I see parents reading these books next to their 7-year-olds, and their 7-year-olds love it and have a big smile on their face and that sort of thing. So I don't know. It's hard to generalize because I just, for me personally, I see a lot of examples of a lot of kids of a younger generation still, you know, being, I guess I would say kids are naturally interested in horror, and that's a little bit the point of my documentary, is that I think that's natural, and I don't think that's new. And you get into the historical stuff, you know, and you find that kids who were liked scary, hearing scary stories and telling scary stories since the beginning of time, since we came up with the whole idea of stories around a campfire, you know,
because it's all essentially folklore.
Exactly. I mean, these stories, yes, we're talking about a particular collection that happened in the 80s and 90s, but they're not new stories. And this kind of sets these books apart from a lot of other books that they get lumped into, which I get that it's natural that you're lumping them into with Goosebumps and Scary Stories for Sleepovers and a number of series that came out around that same time. But these were different because they were a little more, you know, I say they're the modern day Grimm's fairy tales, right? Because they're not totally original. They're actually imparting part of our history to some degree. Yes, it's folklore. It's you know, and there was thick source material at the end of the books that kind of went into, you know, these really interesting source materials of these stories and where do they come from and different variations of it. I mean, you know, one of the stories that people reference the most is Harold, which is this, you know, scarecrow who comes to life basically and, you know, does some not so nice things. But of course, in the source material, it's making comparisons to Frankenstein. It's making a comparison to the Golem of Jewish tradition. It's making these connections and saying, okay, I know you just had a thrill with this scary story, and that's great for kids that are interested. This has underpinnings to all kinds of other traditional stories and stories that we've been imparting to our kids for a long time.
The documentary, it had a lot of stuff that got me. The father-son stuff got me. I don't want to ruin too much, but the ending, the conversation at the end, really, it just kind of shows you that, you know, you just got to keep having conversations, and you can't just block people out and say,
yeah,
I disagree with you forever. It was great, Cody. You did a great job.
Thank you. I mean, one of the weird... And this kind of happened along the way, or even some of it I've thought about since I edited it together, was this, you know, yes, the ending became kind of this conversation between, you know, the father of Alvin Schwartz, Peter Schwartz, or I'm sorry, the son of Alvin Schwartz, Peter Schwartz, and this, ex-PTA mother who wanted to have the books removed. And it was a...
Still seemed, you know, to be holding a grudge 25 years later. Still pissed off about it.
Yes, but it became a civil conversation because they were still on different sides of the argument here. And it became a civil conversation. And it was kind of juxtaposed to another part of the documentary where we talk about, okay, here's what happens a lot of times at school board meetings, because this is usually what it results is. Okay, I don't want this book in the school, so I'm going to take it to school board meeting, and it's going to escalate, and it's going to turn into a school board meeting where people are screaming and yelling and are very passionate about it, and it's not particularly conducive to the debate on, and usually the loudest voice wins to some degree, or certainly that can be the
case. Squeaky wheel gets the grease.
It's... I'm sorry?
The squeaky wheel, it gets the grease.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And so not to say anything was solved with this, but the message I kind of like that kind of came along the way is it's possible that, you know, to have a civil conversation, it's tricky, it's not easy, and there's some nuance to it. That said, for a majority of this documentary, I admit, it's a fairly good celebration of these books because I knew that's what people wanted to see. And also there's just a lot of interesting things having to do with these books. So there's a lot to dig into there, but then also it kind of starts to question, okay, if this book is often removed, oftentimes very quietly from bookshelves, and it has had a positive effect for a lot of people, maybe we need to start thinking about, you know, how we go about it, right? How we go about talking about it and how we go about, you know, debating whether to remove books from library bookshelves.
Who did the art animation for the interstitials between like the interviews and the chats in the movie?
His name is Shane Hunt. And he's great. I mean, he just did a fantastic job. I mean, the tricky part is kind of, you know, being able to use Stephen Gamel, the original illustrator's style, and mixing that with animation. And he'd never done that specifically. He could do the style, and he did animation separately. So it was an interesting experience, kind of melding like both the style and the animation together. And yeah, I think
he really did a great job of emulating Gamel, and did it really add like a creepiness factor to it, because there is something about that art that really kind of captures and like kind of touches on those like horrific elements. And I thought that the animation, like, while, you know, it still had like kind of like a childlike wonder, it really did kind of add like a total creepiness factor to the story that you were telling. You did a hell of a job.
Thank you. Yeah. It's I'm talking about it now as if, you know, but it's happened over a number of years, and it's definitely been a learning experience, as well as just a really great experience, just to kind of figure out how to best serve the story. Yeah.
Cody, are you working on anything else? You got something else you're cooking up, or taking a break from?
Yeah, nothing far enough along. I mean, definitely.
Can't talk about it yet.
The general plan is to move over to a narrative film, but I generally this summer I'm trying to nudge that along far enough to talk about it further.
Guys, Cody's movie, it's a Scary Stories. It's a documentary on the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark books. Go to scarystoriesdoc.com to check out all the. I'm sure there's links to places you can buy it or rent it. At Scary Stories Doc on Twitter. Cody, thanks for spending some time with us. We appreciate it. It was fun. Let's do it next time something comes out.
Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Thanks, Cody.
I like Cody. He seems like a nice guy. He's passionate about his craft. You know what I'm saying, Travis?
I like Cody. I like his movie. I'm sincerely really, really enjoyed this movie. And if anybody even has like a slight remembrance of those books, or if they're diehard, like it really recaptured something in me. I watched it with like a sense of wonder, because it was nostalgic, but it wasn't just nostalgia. It like touched a part of me, right? Like, this is a huge part of my childhood. And if you're similar to me and you remember these things, and you remember these tattered copies of these Scary Stories books in your school library, this documentary is absolutely for you. It was really good.